Today on Maine Calling, Maine's economic outlook for 2025. Maine heads into 2025 with continued low unemployment. In fact, Maine's unemployment rate has been under 4% for 3 years now. But that doesn't tell the complete story of the Maine economy. Maine employers, hospitals, schools, factories, can't find enough people to fill the jobs they have open. Baby boomers are retiring in record numbers. State government is facing a projected budget shortfall. And the new Trump administration has promised tariffs on Canadian imports. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we check in with economists and researchers who think a lot about these issues for their analysis of where Maine's economy is headed in the new year. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible in part by Maine Farmland Trust, working with farmers to grow the future of farming and food in Maine. Learn more at mainefarmlandtrust.org/learn, and by Maine Health, where care teams provide expert, coordinated care focused on your overall wellness to help you be your healthiest self. mainehealth.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Today, we look at how Maine's economy is faring and what may be in store for the new year. Joining me, Amanda Rector, who is Maine's state economist, Yellow Light Breen, president and CEO of the Maine Development Foundation, and James Myall, policy analyst for the Maine Center for Economic Policy. Of course, you are part of the conversation. What are you thinking about in terms of your part of Maine and the economy? Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Welcome back to all of you. I can't believe it's been a year since we had this discussion. Amanda Rector, I'm going to start with you, and I'm going to start with just the broad question. I know that our unemployment rate remains low. What are the indicators that matter to you? What are you looking at as you think about where Maine may be headed, where the economy is today and where it may be headed?
Yeah. So I definitely, unemployment is one of those, and labor force. I will say that overall, coming out of 2024, the economy has been a lot less volatile than it was the past few years. So we are still seeing growth. It's been slowing growth, but we were sort of expecting that. You know, there was a lot of sort of really high ups and downs coming out of the pandemic. GDP growth has remained strong. We've seen wage growth and personal income growth remaining pretty strong. Population, we at the end of December every year, we get the new update from the Census Bureau on population estimates. Those came in pretty well for Maine, so that was reassuring.
What did we find out? How many people have moved to Maine this year, this past year?
Yeah, so we did see continued migration in. We had an overall population growth of about 5,400. So it's a little bit lower than it was the previous year. But we did still see some pretty good net migration. 2024, we were the 20th highest of total net migration. We saw more international than we had previously, but part of that was a result of the Census Bureau doing a really big overhaul of their international migration methodology. So they really increased their estimates of international migration to the U.S., which was very interesting. I could go on and on about that, but that would be a whole separate topic.
Okay, so I think I cut you off. You were talking about some of the fundamentals. Had you finished your list, or are there some others you look at?
I mean, that covers it. We try to sort of get a good overview of what's happening at a state level and then some of the national factors as well. So things like inflation, interest rates. We don't have state-specific versions of those. We just use the national level because the national economy, of course, has a lot to do with how the state's economy is doing.
So overall, if we were to sum it up, how Maine is doing right now is well, and growth, very steady,
slow growth, not rapid growth, but also less volatile than you expected the past year to be.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's kind of a boring economy, but that's not a bad thing.
Okay, Yellow, how do you look at it? How do you measure it? You have certain sort of red flags and yellow flags and green lights, right?
Yeah, you know, so I think having worked in the business world and probably spending a lot of time with people in the business world, I think about not just what's going right and what's challenging for Maine, but how competitive are we, right? What are our assets? What are our strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats? So we support the Maine Economic Growth Council, a bipartisan, nonpartisan group that puts out the measures of growth. And every year, as you said, they put out the a list of 30 plus metrics on the economy, everything from workforce to the environment to crime. And within that, they highlight these gold stars and red flags. You know, and not surprisingly, when we look at the list, you see gold stars for our recent investments in broadband and internet connectivity, where the high end of that has tripled in just 2 years, which is, you know, amazing. You just don't see that in those sorts of
numbers.
When
you say the high end of that has tripled, is what you mean that there are three times as many people with fiber, with high speed internet?
Yeah, I think it's the 100 megabytes and up has okay. gone from about 13% to almost 40% in the state, which is just phenomenal in just 2 years' time. So that's public and private investment at work. And that's, you know, that's going to, I think, continue to magnify the trend of people being able to move to Maine, port their careers and their businesses with them, which of course is going to magnify one of the red flags, which is the housing availability. So, you know, but as I said the other day, you know, it's a good problem to have if more people want to move to your state and then you're working to catch up to that demand, to that desire. Then the other way around, you know, the infamous U-Haul data set came out the other day as far as one way, you know, moving vans, and Maine was near the top of the country on the positive of one way moves, which wasn't the case, right, 10, 20 years ago. So that's why I say it's a better problem to have than when we were talking about the brain drain all those years.
Okay. James Mile, your turn. How do you think about Maine's economy? What are you looking at? What are the indicators that matter to you?
I think I broadly agree that I think the economy has been doing pretty well in the last few years. I think a lot of the indicators that we've looked at in our State of Working Maine report show that Maine's also been outperforming the nation in a number of different places. You know, our GDP has been growing faster than the national average. Wages have generally, you know, unlike some parts of the country, wages have generally outpaced inflation. I think one of the things that has been a positive sign for me in the last little while has been, yeah, I think when we may talk about kind of the tight labor market that we have, the strength of that labor market has meant that a lot of folks who have traditionally been either on the sidelines or have kind of been left behind by the employment market have been able to catch up. So we've seen sort of wages increase fastest for the lowest wage workers. We've also seen things like the gaps between men and women narrow slightly, and especially the gaps between people of color and other folk and, you know, white folks in the economy has narrowed. So those groups that have often been left behind by the economy are sort of have been able to catch up a little bit in the last few years in this really strong labor market. So that's something we'd like to see continue.
Okay, well, I want to talk about some of these specific things. Anybody who listens to Maine Calling regularly knows that we've spent the past year looking at Maine's affordable housing crisis. We'll be talking about it again tomorrow. But Amanda, I want to ask you the question in this way. How does the affordable housing crisis affect Maine's overall economy? Could we be growing even faster if there were more homes in Maine?
Oh, absolutely. I think that that's something, you know, the conversation a few years ago was really specifically around, where are the workers? We need more workers. Why can't we find enough workers? And it's evolved now to be, gosh, housing is a really hard thing for us to be able to find the workers we need. So it's really sort of drilled down to that specific aspect of it. And so I think that one of the points about it that I think is worth repeating. This came out of the housing production needs study that was done, I think it was the end of 2023. And it's not just low income or, you know, sort of the affordable housing that's the issue. It's housing at all different income levels that's needed. And what ends up happening, if you don't have enough housing for folks at the high income, they buy down to the middle income levels. Then folks at the middle income can't find the housing they need. They buy down at the lower income levels. It's this sort of trickle effect you end up with. And so it's all levels that need more housing built. And that really is a major stumbling block to continuing to see migration into and around the state in order to be able to provide the workforce that we need going forward.
And Yella, when you're talking to businesses, what are they telling you? Are they telling you that we are trying to recruit this person to come work for us and they're not coming here because they can't find a house? Is it that simple?
It's stunning when you look at it. Just 3 years ago, the percentage of Mainers could not afford the median house in their community was 56%. Now it's almost 80% just 3 years later. I mean, the trajectory is steep. It's dramatic. I think what you hear from businesses is that, you know, they're trying to find creative partnerships in both childcare and housing. And I think to some degree, they feel like they can have a bigger impact on childcare because the scale is a bit different. You know, maybe a few thousand dollars of extra investment per slot versus hundreds of thousands of dollars of extra investment per house. So, but private business is increasingly part of the equation of working with community action agencies, working with childcare providers, working with housing providers to either guarantee the first set of tenants into a new housing project or to co-invest with the private developer into that housing project. You saw that at Jackson Laboratory down in Bar Harbor. You've seen it in the Bath area with Bath Iron Works and so on. So no matter what scale, and I also hear from businesses a lot that they will entice someone to move here. They'll help them find some kind of temporary or transitional housing. But when they then try to find the permanent house, it's not there in the marketplace and they wind up leaving the area. So it's huge, and it's definitely, as Amanda said, a ceiling on our economic potential here in Maine for sure if we can't catch up to it.
And James, you were talking about how Maine, our increase in wages has outpaced the nation, but has that increase in wages, and I think I know what the answer is, outpaced the increase in housing costs?
No, it has not. And I'm glad you sort of asked that, because I think that those figures where we use the overall inflation rate can kind of mask some of these bigger problems in specific sectors like housing. We found that kind of across the income board, kind of rents especially have increased faster than wages, kind of at all levels, whether you're looking at sort of low income folks with, you know, who are renting lower rent apartments or higher income folks renting higher rent places. At every level, kind of rents have been increasing faster than wages. But we know that have also been like particularly impacting, folks on lower incomes are most likely to be cost burden spending. You know, the metric that's used is about 30% of your household income to be spent on housing. We know lower income folks, but also people who are younger, people of color, some of those groups that we know are sort of more vulnerable in the economy in general are most likely to be burdened by housing costs. So it's hitting everyone, but it's hitting some groups sort of especially hard. And then I think the other piece that I think about with housing is making sure that we also have, you know, we kind of talked about that a little bit already, but making sure that we have housing built in the places where there are jobs and where people are working so that folks aren't having to rent or buy houses a long way from where they're working and having these long commutes, which is extra time and extra cost for people.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, James. I know people who drive an hour and a half, 2 hours from one place in Maine to another place in Maine to work. It's not even as though they're living out of state or something like that. Let's talk about the age of our workforce and the age of the people who live in Maine. We're often competing with Vermont for technically, by census data, the oldest state in the nation. Amanda, we're supposed to get older, right? And wait a minute, how is this happening with so many people moving here? And baby boomers are retiring. How does this impact the next year?
Right. Yeah. So it's been really interesting. You know, you mentioned people moving here as a factor. And we actually, from 2020 to 2023, Maine's median age didn't change. It was the same in 2023 as it was in 2020. Actually, it dipped down a little bit and then came back up again. But nationally, the median age continued to increase during that period. And the reason for that was we had more younger people moving into Maine. And so we actually closed the gap a little bit. Now our median age is still well above the US, but now it's like 5.7 years instead of 6.3 years, something like that. So we definitely have a large contingent of the baby boom generation. Baby boomers were born between 1946 and 1964. And so if you think about where they are in their sort of life cycle and work life cycle specifically, more and more of them are moving into what we think of as the traditional retirement ages. And we just don't have the people to backfill behind a large swath of those retirements. So it's a mix of solutions for businesses, some of which are, okay, we continue to try to attract more people. But it's also how do we keep people engaged in the workforce longer? How do we come up with other solutions that involve more technology or other types of substitutions for labor? And how do we be more creative in engaging the folks who haven't traditionally been as involved in the labor force, either unemployed or underemployed, people with disabilities, veterans, a lot of folks who have struggled to be sort of engaged fully in the labor force. We need all of them. And so we need to think about how we can best engage all of them.
Yeah, doing things the usual old-fashioned way is not going to work anymore. We do need to take a quick break. We are talking about Maine's economic outlook on Maine Calling. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we are talking about the outlook for Maine's economy in 2025. My guest for the hour, Yellow Light Breen, who is President and CEO of Maine Development Foundation, James Mile, Policy Analyst for the Maine Center for Economic Policy, also known as MESEP, and Amanda Rector, who is the Maine State Economist. We invite you to join the conversation. What are your questions for them? Send us an email, talk@mainepublic.org. Comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. On the line with us now is Renee Cordes, who is senior writer with Maine Biz. Renee, thanks for calling in.
Thank you. Good morning.
What are you hearing from Maine businesses as we head into 2025?
Well, in general, I would say we are hearing more optimism than pessimism. That's reflected in some of our latest polls. We send out a weekly poll to subscribers. One that I'm thinking of, we receive responses from more than 200 people. Close to a third said they expect this to be a good year financially. Close to half of the respondents said yes, they're optimistic, but not with ups and downs, so a little bit of a qualifier there. And at the other end of the equation, only one in four said they are pessimistic. In another poll, we asked about business expansion plans this year. So in that poll, 4 out of 10 subscribers said they have expansion plans on several fronts. That includes hiring more employees, adding to their physical footprint, branching out into new markets, whether that be in different parts of Maine or other states. And only a third said they have no plans to expand this year.
Oh, interesting. That's a lot of businesses. Let me ask you about your most recent print issue, which focused on manufacturers. How is that sector faring?
I would say pretty well. In the past few years, it's added about 3,500 jobs in the last 5 years. That's according to state data. All the more impressive when you consider that the vast majority of Maine manufacturers are very small businesses with fewer than 20 employees. I would also say that for companies of all sizes, a new administration in Washington could spell a little bit of a bumpy year ahead. And the biggest concern, which you mentioned in your introduction to the show, tariffs and global trade wars. So Trump has talked about tariffs of 60% more on China, 25% on Canada and Mexico. Those are America's three largest trading partners. There's still a lot of unknowns, and Trump has dangled the prospect of some exemptions for some companies. No matter what happens, though, companies here are bracing for higher prices for imported products and parts and disruptions to export markets if other countries retaliate. There also are some indirect effects, too. Think about craft brewers in Maine who buy aluminum to make cans. So even those that are buying from domestic vendors, a lot of those domestic vendors get that aluminum from overseas. So if there's a tariff on imports, making cans gets more expensive. And if the price of imports goes up, there's also more competition for domestic suppliers of raw materials. That all contributes to driving up prices, and those costs are often passed on to the consumer. I would also say, in addition to smaller manufacturers, larger ones are also anticipating a bumpy road. In fact, the head of one large manufacturer told me recently that they were thinking about slowing down plans to build a factory. So that's very telling. And there might be others holding off as well, because the thing that businesses despise the most is uncertainty.
Yes, and we have a new administration coming in. Renee, I'm so glad you brought up the point of tariffs, because I want to build on that. And thank you so much for calling in. Renee Cordes, senior writer with Maine Biz. And I'm going to return to you, Amanda, and ask you, I know that the last time there were tariffs, the lobster industry was hit hard, because so many China is the biggest market for lobster. But I've heard some interesting things in conversations recently about who else could be affected. Renee is mentioning breweries because they use aluminum cans. I've heard that peat is a big import from Canada. So I'm wondering what you're looking at. What industries could be affected by tariffs, especially for China and Canada?
Yeah, I mean, so keep in mind, obviously, in Maine, Canada is our single biggest trading partner. A lot of that is energy related, but it's a lot of other sectors, too. I think the biggest factor really is that uncertainty. And you just don't know yet who's going to be excluded, who's not going to be excluded, how big they might be, when they might start. So businesses are doing their best to try to get ahead of it, but without knowing, it really is just a guessing game for a lot of folks. And that means that for those of us who are sort of thinking about the economic impacts, it's even more of a guessing game, because not only do we not know what the policy is going to be exactly yet, we don't know what the responses to the policy are going to be yet either. So it's definitely one of the big uncertainties that I'm looking at as I'm looking into 2025.
And James, I saw you nodding about the uncertainty and the difficulty in making predictions. We're talking about a new administration, which has talked very publicly about tariffs. James has also talked very publicly about basically, I'm going to use the Donald Trump word, rounding up and exporting people who are either in this country illegally or don't fit a criteria that is as yet defined. And I'm wondering what that means for Maine.
Yeah, I think the combination of the tariff policy and the immigration policy are like two really big points of uncertainty, but also like, yeah, there is uncertainty, but the signals that we've been getting from the incoming administration, I think, are really bad on both fronts. I mean, I think, you know, one thing that I think about when I think about tariff policy is, I think, you know, there are examples where, and typically this is the approach that sort of different administrations have taken, of targeted tariffs against specific industries or specific countries, especially where it's seen to be kind of balancing out for unfair trade practices in other countries. I think that's one thing. I think the approach that the incoming Trump administration has signaled of kind of universal tariffs is potentially really damaging. I mean, something, you know, I think I've read that, you know, large amounts of our heating oil come in through Canada, for example. And so, you know, there are impacts on businesses, but there are direct impacts on consumers as well. And especially if we're hitting, you know, with tariffs, which act like taxes, you know, especially if we're hitting those on things that we are not producing in this country and are not going to be able to produce in this country cost effectively, like those are just going to be extra costs that are passed on to individuals. So whether that's in groceries or in heating oil, or in, you know, some of these, or in consumer electronics is another area where we import a lot of things. You know, those are all going to potentially increase prices for folks. And, you know, we know that people have been hurting from some of these price increases and have been really not enjoying the price increases that came with the general inflation. So I think those could be really problematic. And I think I'm glad you brought up immigration, because I think that's another area with a lot of uncertainty, and that has a lot of human impact as well as a lot of business impact. I think there have been signals that, you know, large numbers of undocumented people are potentially going to be targeted. You know, that could be, you know, 11, 12 million people across the country. Obviously, that has a big impact for those individuals, I think, and their families. You know, there are a lot of families with mixed statuses. You know, some citizen children could have their parents at risk, for example. And then it has, you know, a direct impact on some of the workforce. We know that, you know, sectors like construction, for example, have large numbers of undocumented folks working in them. So that's going to make it more expensive to build housing if some of those workers disappear. And then we know from the last Trump administration, it also had a chilling effect on sort of traditional legal immigration as well. And in a state like Maine, where we need more workers, you know, having an administration that's actively anti-immigrant makes it harder for companies to recruit those people to come here.
And I'm
one
gonna
sector we haven't mentioned, I would just say on the trade side, is the forest product sector in Maine. About 1 million tons of wood comes in and out of Maine from Canada each year, which makes sense, right? Given where you might have your wood lot on the border, given that you've got paper mills in Baileyville and Madawaska, where a huge part of their supply chain is right on the Canadian border.
Yeah, thanks for saying that. And Yellow, I was going to turn to you next to this point of uncertainty. I'm going to read an email from Charles. Charles writes, I run a small gallery on the coast and have never experienced a slower November and December. Even on the Saturday just before Christmas, our main street had countless empty parking lots. I believe this difficult atmosphere for New England storefronts will continue for several more months, as the Northeast generally voted for Harris, with the closest state that Trump won being Pennsylvania. Too many are fearful and thus spending only on the items they need. So I think Charles is talking about more sort of a psychological, people feeling fearful and uncertain, and so therefore just kind of hunkering down.
Well, I think we touched on this. You mentioned uncertainty and volatility. They're not the friend of people investing or spending. So both consumer confidence and business investment, you know, depends on your weighing of the odds and the risks out there. Even if these trade wars don't come to pass, you know, even if they are a bargaining chip, what investment do they deter in the short run, I think, is one of the things we're all putting our finger on. We actually at MDF host the Maine Downtown Center, which works with Main Streets all across Maine, and trying to bring our historic downtowns into a place where they're diversified and vibrant and sustainable, which I think they're generally doing pretty well, you know, compared to 20 or 30 years ago. But it was tough for them during the pandemic. And I think we saw a little bit of retrenchment in the tourist economy this year compared to just the off the charts the last few years. So, you know, a lot of small businesses, 1 or 2 weeks or months in their busy season can make or break them for the whole year. And that's pretty tough.
Calling in now is Norm O'Reilly, who is Dean of the University of New England College of Business and Executive Director for their Center for Sport and Business Innovation. Norm, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Jenna, for having me.
Yeah, so I asked all our guests at the beginning what fundamentals they are most concerned about, what indicators they're looking at. I understand you're really focused on the talent shortage of Maine.
Yeah, you know, as a university and dean of a business school, and all the other speakers have mentioned that too, it's well known that Maine has got this talent problem. And one of the big issues, as many have talked about, is just the cost of living. And the economy's going pretty well at many levels right now with a lot of concern, but a lot of it is, you know, based on the inflationary times we've had recently and how that impacts people of a certain income bracket. A lot of people in Maine are fine, but there's a group of our population that are struggling. And a lot of these things that are potentially coming, tariffs, et cetera, that we've been talking about, all have inflationary results. As economies adjust, talent gets tighter, things get more expensive, products and supply chains get tighter. So that's the real thing that we're looking at, and as we're trying to get more people to come to Maine to study and then stay and then to work and then to start new businesses, we need more big companies like IDEXs and WEXs and L.L. Bean. So that's really what I'm thinking about.
It's interesting you say that we need more big companies. Why do you say that?
Well, that's where big, higher-paying jobs come from. And so if you look at, compare Maine to a lot of other states across the country of similar size, they have larger organizations. Even the four or five that we talk about, you know, add Bath Ironworks to that mix, are not huge companies when you look at a national or global scale. And that's really why we lose. And then we see it here. A lot of our really talented graduates look to Boston, look to New York, look to Chicago, look elsewhere for those opportunities because they want to buy a home. They have a very different generation than myself that's graduating right now. They want to move quickly. They want to buy homes. They shop online, back to what some previous things we talked about. So they're very attracted to those pieces. And we just don't have a lot of those positions here that attract the young talent. So they look elsewhere.
Well, Norm,
flip Norm's comment on his head, though, a little bit. I think he's right on one level, which is, you know, we do not have a lot of large companies based in Maine, which is difficult when we're trying to forge new innovative partnerships in some of these research and development areas, right? We don't have that anchor company that can say, we will deploy this technology the second that it's ready. So it is a challenge in that sense. But on the other hand, in 21 and 22, we had just off the charts small business startups in Maine, and the proportion of startups to small businesses that failed, sort of the survival rate, if you will, of entrepreneurs in our state was just higher than it ever been in a decade. So I think we also have to embrace what is our path, because we are too small, frankly, to provide 10, 20,000 skilled workers at a shot to a really huge company coming here. We have to build our own and then build them into the IDEXs and the Chinbros of the world as they grow. So I think the combination of leveraging our small business startups, number one. Number two, making sure that we are really attentive to retaining the headquarters of the larger companies that we do have, and then building the partnerships that make those mid-sized companies keep growing. I think about 800 people at Athena Health, a software company in Belfast. And, you know, they're off the radar, right? Because, you know, they're kind of out in the little office park. But that's huge for Maine. So how do we make sure that those sort of software jobs, which would be tiny in Boston, but are really meaningful for us, you know, stay here with the right supports for training and hiring and retention?
Yeah. And Norm, before I say goodbye, do you want to follow up?
Yeah, I want to just, it's exactly what, and that would be another part of what the university, and we're really thinking about it, is how do you don't bring in the big company tomorrow, just as he's saying. You kind of create, we have entrepreneurship programs, we're building centers, you're reaching out to industry leaders, creating these opportunities, innovation for things to grow, because you're very right, we need to grow, like all those companies we've mentioned have started in Maine, grown, and you start as a small shop, and you grow, and you grow, and you grow. And that can then really provide those engines, both for entrepreneurs, but also for the talent that wants to work for entrepreneurs to stay and to be here and to be attracted here, et cetera, and to fill those needs that we have, both demographically and economically.
Well, Norm O'Reilly, thank you so much for calling in. Norm, the Dean of the Business School at the University of New England. What are your questions or comments for our guest today when we talk about Maine's economy and our economic outlook? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org or post on Facebook or Instagram if you're quick. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Today, we're talking about Maine's economic outlook. With me, James Mial with MESEP, state economist Amanda Rector, and Yellow Light Breen with the Maine Development Foundation. You can share your comments and questions by email. That's a quick email to talk@mainepublic.org. Also, a quick Facebook or Instagram post. Or you can give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. And we're going to go to Jamie calling from Portland. Hi, Jamie. Go ahead.
Oh, hi, Jennifer. Hey, you know, you get these tidbits sometimes, and I don't know if it's wholly accurate, but I saw some news story about as a percentage of population, York County and Southern Maine, Cumberland County included, has one of the highest percentages of home offices or home workers, so to speak. And so I'm just wondering how they show up on the state economist's website, and truth be, or on their radar. And truth be told is my wife's home office is in Utah. And so she works from home. And, you know, that does bring a lot of value into households if you can bring your income into the office space. So there's a couple drivers there. And I'm just, and so I think there's tens of thousands of newly created home office people after the pandemic. And I just was curious what the panel thought about it.
Jamie, I'm so glad you brought up this point, because it is true, and it's been documented, especially during COVID, a surge of people able to work from home, even moving to new places like Maine to work from home. Yellow brought up the point that we have more high-speed internet than we did before, so people can move to really beautiful remote places and still work from home, and even if the home office is someplace by, like Utah. Of course, on the other hand, and I'm going to turn to you, Amanda, we're hearing about more and more companies saying that's not going to fly anymore, that we're going to want people returning to the office. So when you look at the year ahead, or I'll even stretch it out to the 5 years ahead, what do you see this, what kind of impact do you see on Maine's economy?
Yeah, it's been really interesting trying to get a good handle on the remote worker population. We do know that there was that big surge during the pandemic. Anecdotally, there I've heard of some transitions from people who moved here with a remote job and then changed their next job, now is for a local employer. That's what we would love to have happen, is the folks who moved here are now, you know, buoying our own local workforce as well. I will also point out that while there is a lot to be said for the influx of higher incomes, a lot of these jobs tend to be higher income jobs, that can also be really challenging, particularly if you get a lot of folks who are moving into a smaller, more rural area. There's a lot more demand for services that can bring housing prices up. So it's not, it's a bumpy road for sure. But I do think that, you know, if there is the potential to continue to offer both local employment opportunities for people who were previously working remotely, and then also try to, you know, maintain that, hey, we're a place where you can live and have a good remote job, for the places that are still doing remote work, because there are still companies and organizations out there who are doing that. I think that can go a long ways towards continuing to see Maine grow population and grow workforce as we're trying to balance the retirements of the baby boom generation.
Yeah, Yellow, I'm going to turn back to the high-speed internet question. Maine has fought so long and so hard to have access, universal access for everybody. But is this in some ways sometimes a case of you might not get exactly what you think you're going to get with it?
Well, I think the challenge has always been to balance the capability with the cost, right? I mean, it's never been the case that we couldn't build high-speed internet almost everywhere, but building it at a price point that the typical consumer and small business could afford is the rub. So obviously, a lot of the subsidies are really helping that build on existing legacy networks and expand into rural Maine. I do think we should be honest that we have sometimes a mismatch, right, of where the opportunities are and where the people are. And, you know, rural Maine is aging even more than the state as a whole. Rural Maine was hit hard by the, you know, the decline in manufacturing 20 years ago, even though it's stabilized now. But I see a resurgence in rural Maine, but the question of bringing people not just to Maine in general, but bringing them to all parts of the state, you know, and having the educational, healthcare, and broadband infrastructure, as well as housing, that makes that a viable proposition for folks. Because there are, as much as work from home is a powerful, powerful opportunity for us, when it comes to manufacturing, healthcare, and outdoor rec, you kind of have to be there for the most part. So, so keeping those industries viable across Maine and across rural Maine, we got to make sure the talent is in the right places as well.
Go to James, did you want to join in?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, I think sort of piggybacking on that, sort of we can think about infrastructure and investment in like a bigger way as well, and thinking about investing in our like person infrastructure, and making, I think, we've already seen some good results from policies like the Free Community College program, and sort of like the enrollment that that's had, and that obviously creates the talent pool for the future and helps people to move up to better paying jobs. I think we can also look at things like investing. We've talked a lot about housing, but we can talk about investing in childcare. We know sort of like the high cost of childcare, I think, actually keeps some folks out of the workforce as well. So it both has impacts on helping those kids often to succeed in the future, but then helping their parents and caregivers get into the workforce or get into better jobs if they want to. So I think we've seen some investments in that, and I think some of our continued success is going to be contingent on continuing to make those investments in Maine people, whether it's in education, childcare, or healthcare.
And James, I think childcare is part of the answer to this next question that I'll throw back to you. This is Alexander on Facebook. He writes, how many people are on disability or Social Security relative to the working population? Seems to me 25% of the population is working. The rest are too young or on government funds or state jobs. And so I think what Alexander is talking about is what's referred to as the missing workforce, the people who are of employment age but not in the workforce. And how many of them are there in Maine, and why?
Yeah, I can take a shot of that, and I suspect other folks will want to weigh in as well. But I think sometimes our like headline rates of the share of people who are working in Maine can be a little misleading because we do have an older population. So a lot of, when you see the headline, what's what's called the labor force participation rate, if it's including all adults, you've got a large number of folks who are above kind of traditional retirement age, and we wouldn't be expecting to be working. I think something we've, but even when you look at the what's often called like the prime age late population, folks between the age of about 25 and 54, we have in the past, we had seen, and this has been a national story of sort of a decline in the share of those folks who are working. I think in the last few years, we've seen a bit of a turnaround in that. And I think the strong labor market has helped. Higher wages have made it more possible for people to be able to go back to work, especially if they have other commitments as well that they have to balance, or if they have to try and afford childcare in order to work. So I think the situation there has been a bit more positive. I do think there are still folks who are left behind, and I think the number one things that I see around there are, I think, healthcare and disability in general. There are, including a lot of folks who don't qualify necessarily for disability benefits, but have sort of chronic health conditions that make it hard for them to work as much as they'd like, or make it impossible for them to work at all in the current state. And we have a bit of a downward spiral that folks can get into in this country, where if they don't have access to healthcare, sometimes if they don't have employment, that makes their access to healthcare harder. So things like expanded Medicaid eligibility have helped there, but there are probably still more things we could do to connect people to healthcare to be able to work. And then I think the other piece is sort of care responsibilities, whether that's childcare or caring for older adults, which can be a big thing in Maine as well. And so the lack of affordable options there can, mean that folks end up dropping out of the workforce to take care of those things. And again, I think paid family medical leave is an example of a program that will be coming online in the next 18 months or so, that will really help folks in that regard. But it's not, the only piece of the puzzle. I think we need more investments in the care industry to help with that.
And Amanda, I want to ask very direct, go back to Alexander's question and the first part of it. How many people are on disability or Social Security relative to working population? Is in Maine it higher than other places?
That is a good question. I do not know off the top of my head. I suspect that because of our older population, it might be if you get a lot of sort of the overlay of folks who are not old enough for sort of Social Security, traditional retirement, but are closer to that and disabled, you may get a higher share of folks who are on disability because they're just the shape of our demographics. I will say that overall, if you look at the reasons people are out of the workforce, the bulk of it really is people who have retired. That really is the short answer to where did all the workers go? They retired. That's the answer. And so that's, I think, why it's so important to think creatively about lots of different ways to keep people engaged, because a lot of those people who have retired, especially if they retired when they were on the younger side, aren't going to want to stay retired. They want to be engaged, and they may be engaged in some way, and they're not even really thinking of it as being employed. So some of those numbers may not do a great job of capturing our actual workforce, just because of how people are thinking of their own participation. But it is certainly, it really is about the demographics when you drill down into those labor force participation numbers.
We'll go to Becky calling from Rockland. Hi, Becky, go ahead.
Hi. I just want to kind of jump off of that last statement. I'm actually of retirement age, but I am not retired. And I continue to work, and I run a small business myself. And I'm, you know, I've always heard that the small businesses are the backbone of the Maine economy, but I now hear, you know, from the University of New England fellow that, you know, big business is going to be advantageous for Maine. And I, you know, historically, they come, they take what they want, and they leave, and oftentimes their parent company is not paying taxes in Maine, or they get, you know, tax benefits, you know, TIFs. And I'm not sure that we should be putting a lot of eggs in that basket, given our population. I think we need a lot more support for smaller business. But I'd love to hear what you think. You know, I think Jamie from MESEP, you know, what is your thinking about that?
I'll go to you, Jamie, first, since Becky tossed to you. But I'm hoping to have some time for Yellow as well. Go ahead, Jamie.
I think this question of making sure that folks who want to stay engaged in the workforce or in the economy can do so is sort of really important. I think the more we can do to try and facilitate that, the better. I mean, I think sometimes it can be a bit of a double-edged sword when you're looking at the data, because you also don't want folks who are sort of who are unable to afford to retire, which, you know, is maybe a separate problem that some of us have. But where they can, I think we should be facilitating it.
And Yellow, I think Becky is specifically talking about the comment that was made earlier in the program about needing more large businesses in Maine. And I know that that's very controversial. Becky, of course, well representing one side of that argument, like, wait a minute, they can shut down and suddenly 2,000 people are unemployed.
Yeah, I think it's a healthy mix, right? Because take a sector like the forest products industry, where you have one of the largest paper mills in the world still in Skowhegan, Maine, that's investing $418 million in upgrading their production lines. And that ripples out to not just the 600 or 800 people that work there, but the hundreds of small business people, the loggers, the people in the greater Skowhegan region in every walk of life who, you know, are part of the ripple effect of the larger businesses. I would flip it around. I agree, though. Maine is a state of small business numerically, and they are the ones that will probably drive disproportionate growth. I would flip it around and say one of the things that concerns me the most that we haven't talked too much this hour is making sure Maine stays competitive, so that whether you're a small business or a large business, you're incented to keep investing here. And not move that business somewhere else. We are a high cost state in a high cost region in a high cost country. That will not change. So how do we make sure that we're, you know, providing the right supports, that we're streamlining the regulatory processes? So whether you're a one person entrepreneur or a 600 employee business, you know, you want to remain here and make your next investment here.
Well, Becky, thank you for being our final caller of the hour, and thanks to all of you today. The voice you just heard, Yellow Light Breen, President and CEO of Maine Development Foundation, Amanda Rector, Maine State Economist, and James Myall, Policy Analyst with the Maine Center for Economic Policy. Today's sound engineer was Sandra Harris. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. And as I mentioned earlier, tomorrow on the program, we've decided to continue our housing series in the new year, The Cost of Living. We'll have an overview of the housing crisis in Maine and nationwide, sort of setting a reset button and talking about it some more, because there is so much to talk about. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.